listening to America's Web Radio. And now time for the Classic Car Show with Steve Rinaldo and Jim Weber.
Good morning and welcome to the Classic Car Show on America's Web Radio. And we're glad to have Mr. Jim Weber in with us today. He's sitting in the big chair. Don't sit on that comb and break it, Jim.
What comb?
What comb? Well, our buddy Mr. Steve Rinaldo's in Hershey, Pennsylvania, and he's out today, but we're glad to have Jim in, and we've got... if we can overcome some technical problems that our caller is having, we will bring you a very special interview about British cars from Kettering, Ohio.
And a neat website. They have a very nice website. So David's going to go ahead and see if we can hook up with Mr. Richard Smith. And our boy Steve is up in Hershey at the AACA headquarters. This is the meeting where a group of national judges get together and determine, after all the cars they've seen and all the shows in the past year, what cars will be national winners. And they're going to choose those, and it's quite a selection, I understand. Steve has done it for quite a long time. I had the privilege of meeting one gentleman from Oklahoma a few years ago who had built a teen's Cadillac and restored it and put a lot of work into it. And all I can say is all of these cars are probably at the level of Pebble Beach or Amelia Island. So,
all right, are we ready to go, David?
I guess. We'll see how we don't... We don't promote speakerphones, but they generally echo, but that's all right. So,
all right.
Go ahead, Joe.
All right. Good morning. Dick, are you there? Nope. It looks like we lost him. Okay.
All right. Yeah, they should be there now.
Are you there now, Dick?
Yes.
Oh, great. Good morning. Okay. You're up in Kettering, Ohio, which is a suburb of Dayton, if I remember correctly.
That's correct. Southeast Dayton.
Right. And you have an MG museum or a British car museum, which focuses
on... cars.
Pardon me?
British cars.
All British.
British cars.
Great.
Yes.
And what do you have on display?
We have about... we have them in two different locations. So each location has about 15 to 17 cars in it.
Wow.
And they run, from... a classic Mini on the small end and to a Rolls-Royce on the high end.
Okay. Can you kind of go down the list of cars and we can talk about them and any special entities on any of the vehicles? Any special history?
I can do that.
Great. Go ahead.
Our oldest one is a 1936 Austin 20 limousine. It has it's an Austin 20 chassis with a Mayfair body on it. There's only 11 left in existence. We have one of two that are outside of England. The other one is in New Zealand.
Okay. Dick, I'd like to ask right quick, as you're going down the cars, are most of your cars owned by the museum, or are they on loan, or do you work both ways?
They're all owned by the museum at this point in time.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Who goes out and finds your cars?
They kind of come to us. It's like falling out of a tree. It's absolutely amazing. The phone rings and somebody says, "I got a car for you. How soon can you come and pick it up?"
Now, how do I get on that list? All of my trees, they just dump a lot of leaves on me, and I have to rake every year.
Dick, David has just become your new best friend.
Well, we weren't sure because when we started the museum, everybody says, "Well, that's just going to be a building full of MGs and Triumphs," and we didn't have any MGs or Triumphs for a long time. We had all kinds of cars, but no MGs or Triumphs. Now we have them both.
Wow!
But it tells us that we're doing something right.
Well, that's great. Well, proceed on. Let's kind of go year by year on what you have.
Sure. Okay. We also have a 1956 Austin A35, little small sedan. And the fellow that gave us that was into minis, classic minis. And he had his own collection, and he didn't have enough room for his minis, so he donated the Austin A35 to us.
Beautiful.
And he had later incidents that we'll talk about later.
Okay, yeah, it's interesting. Now they're starting to sedan race those over in the UK. I noticed at Goodwood they had quite a few of them.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, go ahead.
And next, we have a 1969 Austin 1800. It's a they didn't import those into the United States. This one came in through Canada and somehow wound up on the East Coast, and we got it from the guy there who was having some marital issues, and he needed to get rid of the car.
Marital issues with the car or his wife?
Yeah, I think it was with his wife.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's one of those cars British Leyland denied they ever built, if I remember that, in the marina correctly.
I think you're correct.
Right. But they
and
did,
then
go ahead.
We have a 1966 Austin Mini Moke, which belonged to a, can't think of his last name right now. He and his wife both went to, graduated from college in England, and then he got a job in the United States and came to the United States. And immediately he bought this Austin Mini Moke, 1966, and he had it forever. And I knew him from way back, and so did our president. He was very active in the Mini Club, and he finally passed away, and his wife just was in such dire straits that she couldn't take it anymore, and she died within a year later. So they donated the Moke to the museum because of our relationships with the family.
Tell me about the Moke. Coming from
Jeannie, speak up.
Okay, I was just saying he should remind people that the Moke is the one that was on Fantasy Island when the fellow says the plane,
and then
he the little Moke and drove down and picked up people off of the plane, and it's a very small car. In case people don't know, it's really hardly a car, but it's on the order of a golf cart and has you just step into it and. And it's a lot of fun to ride. Dick had one himself, and he can tell you about that.
Yeah, I passed that on to my son. He lives out in the Long Beach area of California and works on the C-17 transport aircraft for Boeing.
Oh, wow.
And he and his wife are both very active in the Sports Car Club of America racing, and they work just about every weekend at a track somewhere within reach of Long Beach. And he was always renting a golf cart because he has to go around to all the corners during the races and make sure everything's okay and change some things if they're not working right and what have you.
Right.
And so he says, send me the Moke out.
Great.
No. The Moke is long, and the guy that came to pick it up had about an 80-foot-long truck.
Oh, gee. Well,
first thing he said was, how much does that weigh? And I says, maybe on a rainy day when it's got water in it, it's about 1,500 pounds. And he says, that's great. He says, I got two electric cars up above the cab. He says, and it's got my weight distribution all off. So he says, I can reconfigure everything, and that'll be great. So he was more than pleased that it was a very lightweight car.
Oh, that's, yeah. Does it have side curtains?
This one we have at the museum does. The one I sent my son does not.
Okay. All right.
But the way that his son stores this car is neat because there's not much room out there, and he came up with a way in his garage that he could store it.
It's like a cantilevered jack. The Moke fits on that, and he hits the hydraulics, and the Moke goes up kind of like at an angle, and then he drives his Cooper S underneath and parks it.
Oh, that's nice. Now, is it a British Leyland Cooper S or is it a BMW Cooper S?
He has the BMW. Yeah. I have both. I have a 1964 Cooper S, pretty much all original, and I also have a 2009, I think.
No. 11.
Yeah, that's 2011 Clubman.
Wow.
Mini Clubman.
Sure. Okay, well, proceed on with the other vehicles that you've got in the museum.
We also have a Daimler Sovereign, which is very similar to the, has related to the early Jaguars.
Mm-hmm.
And that That car came to us from a family. The man died, and his family donated that car to us because we helped him with some other things, issues with other cars that he had, particularly a Triumph 2000, Triumph 1800. I don't know if you're familiar with that sedan or not, or a Roadster. There's a Triumph Roadster 1800cc, and they upgraded it later issues with a 2000 engine, and but his father had that car, and then his daughter was always being taken around, and it has a little what they call a dickey seat in the back. Are you familiar with those?
Yes.
Okay, in America we call it a jump seat, or rumble seat.
Right.
But anyway, for hours he would drive her around in the big fields that he had on this farm that he lived on, and she'd be in the jump there in the dicky seat in the back, and he'd be driving her around till he or she both had enough of it.
Oh wow!
We helped him with that car. We stored it with for him until he could get the estate established, and then the trick was whether we were going to get the car or whether whatever, but the daughter decided she wanted to have it restored. And so the father put out the money and had it all redone. And it won Best of Show at British Car Day here in Dayton. It won Best of Class in the Dayton Concours d'Elegance. So it came out very, very fine. It's a nice car. Anyway, that's where the Daimler Sovereign came from, that family.
Okay.
And that was a local car.
Right.
We also have three, believe it or not, Humber Super Snipes. We never figured we were going to have one, but now we have three. And so we've got one of them up for sale. But they're all, one is kind of interesting because it looks like somebody went around with a little hammer and chipped all the glass.
Oh, boy.
So we've done quite a bit of work cleaning that car up, and it's not quite running yet, but we're very close to getting it running.
I remember when those were new, and they had fold-down walnut tables in the back of the front seats. Yes.
Yeah, they were used very much so by the establishment in over in England. It's a popular car for that type of purpose.
Right.
Let's see. Then we have a... several Jaguars. Jaguars seem to be coming out of the woodwork. We have a 3.8 Mark II sedan and a 3.8 S-Type. The S-Type is really, really a nice car. We also have a Jaguar XJ6. We have actually two of those. And one's a Series 1 and one's a Series 3. So those are all runnable, and We take them to different shows and so forth to show the cars because it's very difficult to show them in the facilities we have right now.
Those are nice. I remember those, and in fact, they had a reconditioning kit on them that you could get.
Yes, they did.
That replaced all the bushings and things like that. Right, we're going to have to take a break so that David can pay me my exorbitant salary and run a spot for a minute. So.
Okay.
Just don't go anywhere, and we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Steve Rinaldo, host of the Classic Car Show on America's Web Radio. Just talking to you about anti-car insurance. I think that if you're looking for the best coverage for your classic car, consider J.C. Taylor Insurance. They've been my insurer for years in this hobby and have the top rating of all of the insurance companies in the hobby. When you get ready for insurance, call J.C. Taylor or visit jctaylor.com on the Internet.
Don't be hoodwinked by the left, who wants you to believe the fairy tale that we can power America on butterflies, rainbows, and pixie dust. I'm Marita Noon. Get the truth about energy on my show, America's Voice for Energy, only on America's Web Radio.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Hi, I'm Roy Bowman, hoping you'll join us each Friday at noon for our new show, Food and Farm, brought to you by FeedstuffsFoodLink.com, only on America's Web Radio.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Well, Dick and Jeannie, we are back. We were talking about XJ6 Jaguar sedans, and I'll let you go on with the next car.
Next car is a Lotus Eclat Sprint. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not. It's actually a four-door Lotus all fiberglass bodied car. Very unpopular in the United States. Canadians loved it because of the weather up there. They had something warm to drive in all winter.
When they ran.
When they ran. But that car, we have to do a little work on the throttle sticks. And first time I fired it up, I thought I was going to blow the engine.
Wow.
But, we'll get that fixed, and it's going to run. That one came out of California, believe it or not. It was up in the hills, not too far from downtown Los Angeles. And it took us two vehicles to get that down and down those hills and curvy roads back up in there. One to get it out, and then we took it to a gas station, had them bring up the racks and moved it on the racks, and then we moved it into a truck to haul it back to Ohio.
Boy, that was quite a deal.
Well, it turns out one of our members had to take a trip out there to deliver something, and then he had room left in the truck. He says, "I'll bring it back," and so it didn't cost us a dime.
Well, that's great. Good.
Yeah,
that was a car Chapman wished he'd never built, I think.
Yes, that's very true. And one of our, he's not a member, but he's a very strong supporter of the museum. Turns out his father worked for General Motors for many years and saved General Motors from bankruptcy early in the century. And then he took over a company that his dad started up called Reynolds & Reynolds here in Dayton. And he's quite well off. But anyway, he says, when I was young, he says, I was trying to sell those down in Cincinnati, the Lotus Eclat.
Right.
He says, I couldn't give them away.
No, there were two versions of that. And the other was, I think they tried to pass it off as another Elite, if I remember rightly.
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and the last version of that was a very nice car. And they only sold them in the UK, and that was in the mid-80s, and that was quite a car. Okay,
sure.
Go ahead. Go on. Give us...
Okay. We go into the Lotus, a little further in the Lotus. We have a Lotus Elan S4, which actually was a California car and had California wiring restrictions and so forth. They were coming into view at that time. And they, in Lotus's very, what would you say, wise exercise, they decided to use one bulb for both the running lights, the turn signals, and the brake lights in the back end of the car.
Oh, no.
And we had the little box that's about 2 inches square and about 4 inches high, and that's where all the wiring connectors were for that light. And light operation, we could not figure it out. We found no wiring diagrams that had that on there. Finally, we got a hold of a guy in Texas that he sent us a diagram for that, and presto, within a day, we had all the lights up and running on the car.
Incredible. Just incredible.
And that was because of the government restrictions that were going on for all the cars at that time.
Yeah. Is this a coupe or a roadster?
This is actually, believe it or not, it's a hardtop.
Okay.
And wasn't originally, somebody had filled in the, had like a sunroof on it at one time.
Ah.
And that was all filled in with fiberglass, and very, very nice job. If you look at it, you can't tell.
Wow.
The only way we knew is we had to put the headliner in.
Oh, okay.
So we could see it there, but with the headliner in and all that, it's non-visible.
All right.
So... But we worked on that car. It came to us in boxes, basically, from a close friend of the museum. He is one of the starters of the Concours d'Elegance in Dayton, and he was going to restore that car. And he died before he got it done, and his wife generously donated that to the museum. We worked on it for 4 years, and the only thing that was complete when we got it was the body was painted. And the engine was basically assembled except for the carburation and the pumps and so forth. And so we put a lot of work into the car. And like I say, we only worked on it one day a week. We had a team of about four people. but it took us 4 years under that type of a situation to get that car up and running. And the first time we showed it at the Concourse d'Elegance in Dayton and took third in our class.
Well, that's good.
But there's only three cars. The other two were Ferrari and a Maserati.
Oh, okay.
So it's still a story.
Yeah, darn right. Yeah, my son accuses me of that. I'm a runner, and when I run, and I say I finished second in my age group, and he said, "What were there two guys in there?" So, yeah, I'm used to that. Are those the only two Lotus cars you have, or do you have other?
Right now, that's the only ones we have.
Okay,
but we have once we get a bigger building and we get the point where we can have as many cars as we need. The cars are just basically waiting out there to come into the museum.
Beautiful.
Incredible.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And we're the only, by the way, we're the only fully British car museum in the United States or in South America, either one. And the next closest one is in New Zealand.
Okay.
So and he has 300 British cars down there in New Zealand, but 30% of them are Morris Minors. He has more Morris Minors than you can ever see in a lifetime.
Wow. Yeah, I remember those.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I have one of those, too.
Oh, you do? Good. What series?
It's a two-door sedan.
Okay.
I'm not sure what exact series is on it.
Well,
but,
they made a last-ditch effort, final run, if I remember, in the 60s on those, and they brought some into the U.S.
This is about a 59 or 60, so
are they,
I'm not sure just exactly where it would fall.
Yeah, are the headlights in the fenders or in the grill?
They're in the fenders.
Okay, all right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, they were fun cars. That's basically an Austin Healey Sprite sedan or vice versa.
Yes, I put an Austin Healey Sprite 1275 engine in it, and up from the 1000 or whatever that it was, it moves along pretty good. I can start it out in second gear anytime I want.
Sure, it's a nice lightweight car. My friend here in Atlanta has a Morris Minor pickup truck, and it has a full house, as they call it, 1275 in it.
Yep,
so,
yep.
And he's in the process of restoring an original Bug Eye, believe it or not, with a 948, an unmolested car. So,
wow.
Yeah, that's unusual to find on a Bug Eye.
Sure is.
You don't happen to have a Fairthorpe Electron, do you?
A which, please?
A Fairthorpe Electron.
I've heard of it. No, we do not have
it. I tripped over one of those.
Did you really?
Yeah, up at Elkhart Lake, Wisconsin in 1959, okay. We went up for the races. It was the first time I'd been to Elkhart.
Love that track.
And
a little difficult to watch, but because there's not real good track access in certain areas.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's not quite.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's completely domesticated, but back then it was really a beautiful track, and it was primitive and unmolested.
They have the best brats in the world up there.
The best food, and it's usually local churches that do it.
The brats are outstanding.
Yeah, a very close friend of mine was the chief physician up there for the course for many years till he retired. In fact, they paved an area right by the little medical center for him to park his motorhome, so it was level and he didn't have to put the levelers on it, so which was quite an honor, I thought.
That would be good.
Yeah. All right, so we're on Morris Minor, and let's keep going. Any Peerlesses?
Yes, we have a Peerless.
Oh.
It's left-hand drive.
Oh, okay.
The fellow had two of them, and this was the nicest one. He says, but the other one's right-hand drive, so I'll keep that. That works for us.
Sure.
Very nice fiberglass body. We've had that also in the Dayton Concourse d'Elegance, and it was very, very well received and so forth.
Yeah, that's a nice car.
Nice fiberglass body, all the Triumph running gear, The differential is somewhat different, and we had to do some work on that. But other than that, the car is very runnable.
Well, it's independent rear suspension, if I remember rightly, isn't it?
That's correct. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Proceed on. Give me a little more.
We have a, excuse me, a 1977 minivan, which came from it's a family that lived in Lebanon for many years and then moved to Iraq and then wound their way to the United States. And the young man, his first name's Harach, and he wanted a mini so bad it hurt. When he got to the United States, his brother went to work in England and then bought him a mini and had it shipped over to him.
Wow.
And he wound up being such a mini Epicondo that when the new minis came out, he went and knocked on the door of the big dealer out on the East Coast and says, I want to sell minis for you. And they said, well, what do you know about minis? And they started tracing back his lifetime, and they says, you're hired.
Is he still doing it?
Well, he was. He was the leading salesman for the new minis on the East Coast. And he one day they were having a meeting at work, a lunchtime meeting. He had a stroke, and he was dead by the time he hit the
floor. Oh, no. What a shame.
But he donated.
And the family donated the minivan to us, which was actually used when he and his father ran a jewelry store in Boston.
Oh, that's neat. Yeah,
we had a replica of their
logo
made, and that's been attached on the van, and it looks really, really nice.
It's yellow.
Okay. Yeah, yellow. You can spot it anywhere.
You bet.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's keep going down the list.
Okay. We also have a mini kids art car, which was done at the Mini Meet East in Columbus, Ohio in 2005. And basically, it's all covered with plaster. There's no engine in it. The wheels are just there to roll the car around with. The kids were allowed to paint anything they wanted to on the car. So it's one of the things to bring the kids into touch with the cars and so forth. It worked out really well.
That is a big thing David and Steve and I talk about on all of our shows, is bringing children in and getting them involved in the activities and trying to show them the romance of the automobile.
Sure.
And you know, they're not into that. They're too busy playing their Xbox and their other games or looking at their cell phones, and it's sad. David's going to have to write me another check, so we're going to have to take another break and raise some revenue for me. So we'll be right back.
Okay. Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctors' conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
Watchdog is a term given an organization like the United States Justice Foundation, which since 1979 has been watching out and, when necessary, taking the appropriate action from testifying to litigating to protect our constitutional rights. USJF, a nonprofit organization, is nationally recognized not only as a watchdog, but many in the government, as well as those involved in legal cases, have also called the USJF a bulldog for the tenacious approach in their presentation and proof of what is right. Find out more at www.usjf.net. Support USJF as they support you.
Hi, this is Steve Rinaldo, host of the Classic Car Show on America's Web Radio. Just talking to you about anti-car insurance. I think that if you're looking for the best coverage for your classic car, consider J.C. Taylor Insurance. I've been my insurer for years in this hobby and have the top rating of all of the insurance companies in the hobby. When you get ready for insurance, call J.C. Taylor or visit jctaylor.com on the Internet.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
And we're glad to have you listening to America's Web Radio and the Classic Car Show. And we've got Richard Smith from the British Transportation Museum on today. Jim and Richard, Dick have been doing a great job. And I wanted to ask you mentioned something earlier, Dick, as we were talking, or as y'all were talking, that on occasion you sell some of your cars, so you all own all of your cars, so do you get into that trading and selling much?
Not a lot, but when we get three Humbers, we they take a lot of room.
Well, nobody needs three Humbers.
Right, when you get one more Austin Healey, give me a call.
Yeah, okay.
But part of that is if the donor has to agree that they're not donating it just for display, but they're also willing to sell it so they can raise money for the museum. The museum is a 501c3 nonprofit, and when they donate cars, that's a tax exempt for them. And so end of year is a great time, or if there's an estate to settle, they can donate a car, and that can help with their estate planning.
Well, that's neat, and I'm glad you brought that up, Jeannie, because having a few derelict cars of my own sitting around and been the recipient of an eviction notice from my better half on one of them, I understand what you're saying. And it would be a great opportunity for any of our listeners, if they've got a Bug Eye or a Fairthorpe Electron or a Reliant Scimitar or a Humber Super Snipe, you always need another one of those. To get in touch with you folks on your website and
by the way,
car.
That brings up something else. When are you all open, and are you open 362 days a year, or what are your hours and so forth?
That's an issue with the building again. The building is very small, very tight. It's probably less than 4,000 square feet, and we have, 15 to 17 cars in there. And by the time we have to move some outside sometimes when we do what we call an open house. We don't have, we're not officially licensed as a business in the city of Dayton yet, so we can't do just open the doors and say, come on down. So we schedule what we call open houses, and then we had the Jaguar Club of Cincinnati and the Jaguar Club of Dayton came in within the last month, and we had a very nice time with the Jaguar people. They're very excited about what they saw, and they thought it was great, and they will support us.
So you need to call and schedule an appointment to try and get in and bring a group or whatever. The thing about collecting like this is when they formed 16 years ago or better, they decided to have a museum, but you don't need a building until you get the cars. And once you get the cars, then you need the building. And right now they've outgrown two storage spaces, and we've been looking for a building for several years, and it has to meet certain criteria about, you know, being able to get vehicles inside and have parking access, and, you know, there's just all these things that we need to have. And so we're looking for a building. We're also looking for donors that would help us get this building. And we look, I'd say, probably two or three new buildings every month trying to find something that fits, which is really difficult. So in the meantime, we're really cramped into two storage buildings.
And they're 50 miles apart.
Oh, boy. Oh, wow. All right. About 15 years ago, there was a Packard Museum in downtown Dayton. Is that's gone now, right?
No, that's still there.
It's still there? Okay. Because
And within a block of that, there's a museum. It's not actually a museum. It's a private organization, but they do weddings and so forth there, and it's all Porsche-based, so they have a lot of Porsches inside there.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's called Hodge McGarage.
Yes. Yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there's a lot of private collections in the Dayton area. Dayton's very car-oriented. We had factories here. The reason the British cars are here is that after the Second World War, when the Air Force was over there and, you know, would go from England over to bomb and then come back to England, and a lot of the Air Force fellows brought back a British wife and or a British car. So in their spare time, they were in British cars and learned to love them. And so a lot of those cars came back to the Dayton area where we have Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. So a lot of them came back here. So there were a lot of those vehicles around. There's a great appreciation of British cars here in the Miami Valley. And so that's why there's a lot of cars here. Those people have taken good care of those cars, and they don't want them to go someplace and be demolished. And so a good thing to do with a car that has been your baby, your love, that you have pampered and cared for is to donate it to a museum. Even if it's not a British car, there are museums places that will take care of them and respect them the way that you have when you worked on them.
That's neat, and you bring up an important point, and that's the fact that our soldiers during World War II did come back, and they did bring those cars back, especially in GTCs. Yeah, that really kind of started the birth of sports cars here in the U.S.
Yeah, you go back into the MGTD series and T series cars.
Yep,
they're very, very strong in Ohio. Very strong.
Yeah, and 120 Jags. I'm sure there's a few of those around. And are there any Allards in your area?
There are. They're in private collections. One of the main neurosurgeons in the Dayton area owns an Allard, and we helped him at the racetrack a few times with that when he was having some issues, and the people that he had do some work for him didn't do it quite right, and we got him straightened out, and he's much appreciative for that. He's one of our members.
Well, that's great. A few months ago, Hemmings Sports and Exotic had an article about a Triumph restorer that's one of the best in the country, and he's located in Dayton, too, I believe.
He was one of our members for a long time, and he's almost overwhelmed with work and because of those kind of articles and so forth.
Yeah.
And he does a very good job. In fact, he's the one that did the restoration on the Triumph 1800 I talked about earlier.
Okay. All right. Well, let's.
And he's just north of Dayton.
He's north of Dayton. Okay. All right.
Yeah,
I know there's quite a another guy there that does an awful lot of race engines that's out in Brookville that apparently gets extracts a lot of horsepower out of the twin cams, and they live.
You bet.
Reliably, yeah, and he does quite a job. Let's go back to your inventory. Let's talk a little more.
Okay.
We were at the Mini Art Car, and what would be after that in your group?
Yeah, me also a Mini Ice Racer that was raced professionally back in the days. I couldn't tell you exactly when, but it was continually featured in the, a lot of the magazines that covered things like ice racing and so forth. And
okay.
We have that car. The engine was removed from it. But we have one to put back in it and so forth. We just haven't gotten to it yet.
Yeah, it's interesting. The British car scene, the guys have gone back to the original vintage Minis like yours, the Cooper S's and things.
Oh,
and it's 50,000 pounds now for a prepared car.
Yeah, right.
It's just. Go ahead, Jeannie.
We have all volunteers. We have no paid staff, so everything is done by volunteers.
Yeah.
And so when they got together once a week for, working on a car, that's all volunteers, and that takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. Not all the cars are brought back to pristine order. Some of them are left in a condition that would be a collectible condition.
That's called patina, I think.
Right, yeah. we don't want to disturb that.
Yeah, I agree.
We have two Rover TCs. The TC stands for twin carburetors.
Right.
One came out of, has a story by itself. I had a telephone call one morning early, and the lady's on the line. She says, I have this, the Rover 2000 TC that needs to being moved, and we're going to donate it to you. How soon can you get here to pick it up? And I says, well, as soon as we can get on a trailer and a truck, and we'll be there as soon as we could get there. We got to Georgia, and before we crossed the line into Florida, which is where the car was, we secured a motel room because what was happening was there was a hurricane coming to Florida, and this Rover 2000 was under a bunch of trees, and she wanted to get it out of there. That was her favorite car, and she hadn't used it for quite a while, and she didn't want to see it get smashed by a bunch of trees in a hurricane. So we got down there at and had the car loaded at midnight, and then headed back towards Georgia to get to the room that we booked for the rest of the evening to get some sleep before we headed back to Ohio with it. So we call that car Francis, after Hurricane Francis, which was the name of the hurricane coming on that shore.
Well, I haven't talked to anybody that's outrun a hurricane in a long time. So that's a neat story.
That is a neat story.
They loaded it at midnight, and the hurricane was supposed to hit at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
And on their way back, all this traffic was moving north. And so once they got to Georgia, they already had a room, and nobody else had a room because, you know, that everybody was trying to get a motel on the way up. And they had already secured a motel, so they had a place they could sleep. But they had driven down from Dayton straight down to Florida, so they'd put in a long drive already.
But it was bumper-to-bumper traffic that morning in Georgia from there on up to Atlanta. And we thought, man, this is going to take us forever to get out of here. So I pulled out the Atlas, and I looked, well, shucks, there's a real nice divided highway running parallel to the Interstate 75.
Route 25.
No, 75.
No, Route 25 was the one you got on.
Interstate 75 was what we were on coming up through Georgia.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. And so we went over to the we looked in the Atlas, and this route followed 75 100%. It was only about 5 miles over distance-wise. We got on that, and it was like empty highway. And we could go 70 miles an hour on there with no problem. We had two small towns we had to go through, and the next thing we knew, we were in Atlanta.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that's a good way to do it. I have a story on Rover's. I knew a dealer in St. Louis that had a 3500, a new one.
Okay, sure.
And, of course, and that's the one that had the V8, and the spare tire was mounted on the top of the trunk.
I remember that.
And Dorsey couldn't get rid of the car. He told the lot boy to just leave the keys in it at night. Well, lo and behold, the lot boy left the keys in it, and it was stolen.
Wow.
And the problem is the lot boy neglected to put any gas in it, ran out of gas about 3 blocks down, so the lot boy got fired.
Story.
And then he got to keep the Rover.
The other Rover TC that we have came out of the Cleveland area. And the man was getting old, and his family wanted him to get rid of the car and all his. He gave us 30 years worth of automotive publications and so forth that he had in his shelves in his basement. And, of course, the car, which took a little while to get it on a trailer and get it loaded because it hadn't been run for so long.
Yeah, that's.
But anyway, I think he has passed away now, or not sure, but I can't locate him in any way, shape, or form.
Wow.
But yeah. He donated that car, and eventually we will probably sell that also as a fundraiser as we need it.
They were incredible cars. They were very safe at the time, and I had a friend that had a dark gray one with red leather, and it was beautiful.
And the one from Florida that we got even had a ice thing on the front that would tell you whether the roads are freezing or not.
Right.
Freezing. And it had all kinds of safety features, like you said. It was their safety model. It was a nice, nice car.
Yeah. You had some great car dealers in that whole area, too. We're going to take another break because I'm hoping David's going to pay me this morning. Here we go.
That'd be nice. That'd be nice.
Hi, this is Steve Rinaldo, host of the Classic Car Show on America's Web Radio. Just talking to you about antique car insurance. I think that if you're looking for the best coverage for your classic car, consider J.C. Taylor Insurance. They've been my insurer for years in this hobby and have the top rating of all of the insurance companies in the hobby. When you get ready for insurance, call J.C. Taylor or visit jctaylor.com on the Internet.
Don't be hoodwinked by the left, who wants you to believe the fairy tale that we can power America on butterflies, rainbows, and pixie dust. I'm Marita Noon. Get the truth about energy on my show, America's Voice for Energy, only on America's Web Radio.
The United States Justice Foundation, since 1979, has been dedicated to instructing, informing, and educating the public on legal issues confronting America. That means you and me. When necessary, this nonprofit organization has had to litigate to present the constitutional view. Since 1980, USJF has submitted testimony to the U.S. Senate on all but one U.S. Supreme Court nominee. Learn more about USJF by visiting their website at www.usjf.net. Support this nonprofit as it defends our rights, our liberty, and our Constitution.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Well, I'm back. We haven't talked about Triumphs or MGs.
I was just thinking about that.
Yeah.
We have a 1950 MGYA sedan. I don't know if you're familiar with it or not.
Very much.
Okay.
It's a TD with four doors.
It has a sunroof in it, and the windshield itself cranks out at the bottom, so you get ventilation, and of course you can pass the air out through the sunroof, and so it's a neat little car. And it has a jackall system. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It has a hydraulic system that you can jack an individual wheel, or you can jack all four wheels, or three wheels, or however you need to do it if you're out on the road. And it's the same exact system that runs in that Austin 20 limousine that we talked about earlier. Those have the jackall system in there.
Oh, that's neat.
Set it up for which ones you want, which wheels you want to put up, and start the engine up, and up you go.
Yeah, and they have trafficators too, I'm sure.
Yes, the YA does. I don't recall on the Austin 20 whether there's the limousine, but 1936, I'm sure it probably did too.
Any other MGs?
We have an MG Midget, which has been very well consistently taken care of by the owner, and he showed it many, 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 many times, and then he says, I had my fun with it. He says, now it's yours. So very clean car, very nice shape, runs like a jewel.
Side curtain or wind-up window or big rubber bumper or what vintage?
Oh, it's not the later one. Let's see if I can pick out a year here. The 1967 Midget.
Okay. All right, so it's got wind-up windows. Beautiful.
Right.
Good.
Exactly. We have a Morgan 4/4 Series 4, and it came in boxes again. So we haven't even started on that. That's going to be a big job.
Okay.
So we're looking forward to that.
Is it a four-place or a two-place?
I think it's a two-place. I'm not real positive. I can't say for sure. I'm going to say since it's a 4/4, it's probably a four-place.
Okay.
So, yes.
All right. And Triumphs? Any Triumphs?
Yes, that's another story in itself. We have two Triumph Heralds. One's a convertible, one's a sedan. We kind of look at the sedan as more rare than the convertible. How many sedans have you seen in your lifetime?
I'll answer that. I've seen more sedans than convertibles. In fact, the only convertible that I saw had the 6-cylinder engine in it.
Okay.
So
now this one came from. We had a booth set up at the British Car Day one year, and the guy drives up with his convertible, and he's got this envelope. He hands it in the air, and holds it in the air, and he says, "Here, this is yours." I says, "What's that?" He says, "That's the title of the car."
Wow.
All I get with something like that's another bill.
Yeah.
You know? Somebody hands me an envelope. You owe me.
I'll bet you were surprised at that, Dick.
Absolutely, because it's a beautiful car, and it's well taken care of and basically rust-free. And then there's another story with the Triumph. We have two Triumph Spitfires. One's a 1979, the other's a 76. 79 has kind of got a story by itself. It was actually the person that owned it worked for one of the radio stations here in Dayton. They were having a big convention out in Las Vegas. And there's a drawing out there for a Triumph Spitfire. And he entered the drawing, and darned if he didn't win it. So he and his wife took possession of the car from the dealership in Dayton when they got back from Las Vegas.
That is a neat story. I bet he had fun with that car too.
He only drove it to car shows, so the car has only about 8,000 miles.
Oh wow!
It's all original, 100% original. I had one incident with the alternator on it. It was alternator. I took it to a guy that specialized in foreign car alternators and generators and so forth. And I explained to him the situation. I don't want any of these tabs and so forth that are on here torn up. He says, "I'll take care of it for you."
Good, good.
When I got back and picked it up, you couldn't even tell that any of that had been opened up and fixed.
Oh, that's neat.
He did a beautiful job, and he respected the fact that this car was all original and beautiful.
Any TR3s, 4s, 5s, or 6s?
Nope. None of those yet.
Okay.
They're on their way. They're sitting out there waiting for us to have some room to put them.
Oh, wow. Well, that's good. How about MGBs? We haven't talked about them, or Cs.
We do not have any MGBs yet at this time. Again, those are sitting out there waiting for some room to put them.
We don't need it.
So. Yeah. Okay. All right.
One of the more recent ones that we have that's very rare is a Vauxhall DX 14/6. They weren't imported into the United States. And Vauxhall, believe it or not, since 1925 was a General Motors company.
Yes.
I think you're good. You're aware of that.
Oh, yes.
And anyway, they didn't import this particular model into the United States, but there's a man in the New York City area that loved them, and he would buy used ones over in England and have them shipped over, and then he'd restore them and then sell them. And that's where this car was one of his favorites, because it's a convertible, but it has the one that has the top. You can go halfway with it, or you can go all the way with it when you open it up.
Right, right. Yeah.
But he and another man would rebuild these cars and sell them on the market, and this was his favorite, and he kept it. And he passed away, and then his family passed that on to the museum. So.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, Pontiac dealers used to sell those in the late 50s.
I think they did, yeah.
Angora? The top on that is Angora hair.
The Vauxhall top?
Yes, the original top had Angora hair.
Holy smoke.
Yeah. Yes.
That's incredible.
That's one thing that Mr. Weber wouldn't know anything about, his hair.
I don't know much about it either, so don't feel bad.
Hey, yeah, but they still charge us full price for a haircut.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
No, I mean, it's hard messing with those tweezers.
Thank you.
with the seats in that one, where they had used it, the driver's seat was worn, and then what they did was switch the two seats. It had separate seats.
Right.
So they switched it so the worn part was in the center and didn't show. And then to restore the leather and whatever, they put shoe polish on it and buffed it up because it was leather. And that's kind of a trick there. Doesn't cost very much to make it look nice.
Yeah, you just don't want to wear a white dress when you have a black leather car that's had shoe polish on it.
That's true.
Right.
That's
well,
true.
You buff it down good, and people don't ride in these.
Yeah. Well, I happen to know about that a long time ago. I was detailing a Jaguar sedan for a dealer and fixed the black leather with some nice Kiwi boot polish and thought I'd buffed all the polish off of it, and I hadn't. So, anyway, going on.
I can run through the bicycles real quick.
Oh, you have bicycles too?
Yes.
British bicycles?
You bet.
Raleigh?
British transportation.
Yeah, Raleigh's?
Yeah.
Okay.
We got everything. We've got the a 1980 Bickerin portable. We have a 1969 Essex. We have a 1960s Humber Sport. 1962 Moulton Stowaway. You're familiar with the Moulton Stowaway?
Oh, yes,
Stowaway?
Yeah. Well, that's Alec Moulton that designed the Mini.
Absolutely.
Right.
You bet. In the suspension on the Mini.
All right. I've got to ask on the bicycles. I had the first English racer bicycle, 3-speed, that my dad imported for my Christmas present in 1955.
Wow.
And it had a... the headlight on it, it had a little generator that you popped onto the wheel as you were running and generated the light, both front and back, I think, as I recall.
Yep.
But it was, people would look at me like, and it was a 26-incher, and I was all a 27 inches, I think. Still am, but it was tough. I had to learn how to ride it. I'd gone from my little bitty bicycle up to the English racer, and I'd have to park it next to the steps up to our house to get on it and start riding it. But you have anything like that, 54, 55 version?
It was probably a Raleigh, wasn't it?
You know, I don't know what. And it had a little black leather bag on the back. And it also had, in the center section, it had its own bicycle pump.
Tire pump.
Sure.
Yeah, beautiful.
We do have a Raleigh, 1982 Raleigh 10-speed Olympic, if you're familiar with that.
No, I'm not.
Okay. And we have two other Raleigh 20s, 1970 and the 1980s. Raleigh 20. I'm not that familiar with those myself. A lot of the bicycles were sold with different brands, even though they were built by the same people in many cases, which was Raleigh, I believe.
Right.
But we have a Robin Hood, we have a Royal Scot, a Rouge, R-U-D-G-E, which was sold by the Wright brothers for quite a while in their shop in Dayton. And we have a 1960s Triumph and a 1970 Triumph tricycle with the gas motor on it. And
wow.
There's also a clone of that that was used in one of the Dayton General Motors plants.
Okay, all right.
We have that one.
Yeah. Any motorcycles?
Let me say something here. In the museum group, there's a mother who's in charge of the youth department, and the young people have come in, the little kids even, and polished up these bicycles, and that's where they participate and feel like they've done something. We have some good pictures of them working on the bicycle.
Jeannie, that's great. Good. We're going to have to wrap the show up, but just 1 minute. Any motorcycles? Any British motorcycles?
No motorcycles yet.
Okay. You're going to work on those?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because that was one of the pioneers in England were British motorcycles of that whole industry.
Dick, have you got a takeaway that you can give us right quick before we end the show?
We have two scale model cars. We have a 1/4 scale MGTD that was all hand-built. We have a 6/10 scale 1965 Morgan Plus 4 that was all hand-built.
Wow.
We want to give you our BritishTransportationMuseum.com to get on the web.
.org.
I'm sorry, .org. And so come and see our site, BritishTransportation.org.
Oh, we...
BritishTransportationMuseum.org.
Oh, I'm sorry, we'll get it in a minute. BritishTransportationMuseum.org.
Wonderful.
Dick and Judy, we certainly appreciate you all being on the Classic Car Show today. And we will archive this, and people can go to our website and pull it up. If you all would like to download it, it'll be there for you. And hopefully you'll mention being on America's Web Radio on your website as well.
Great.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. You guys have a great weekend and a Merry Christmas.
Same to you.
Thank you.
We'll see you next week on America's Web Radio and the Classic Car Show. Stay tuned for Food and Farm, followed by America's Homegrown Veggies and the Master Gardener Hour.
This is America's Web Radio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.